Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We can't be in the same room, but a podcast can't be stopped. The cinemas are empty, the industry is fucked, but we won't log off. We're not going out, we're staying at home. And when we watch films, we watch them alone. We sit in our pants, stick on something crap, and then we hit Skype for a little chat. Little chat, little chat, little chat, little chat.
Alrighty. Danny, hello.
Hey.
And welcome, listener, to a rare installment, increasingly rare installment of Film Chat. We're back. We have managed to watch some films once again, and we're going to be talking about them. First of all, how are you doing, Danny?
I'm good. You know, everything's back to normal, right? We don't have to wear masks anymore. Far as I can tell, COVID's just over, right?
No, it's over now.
It's over now. It's all like fine. A bad dream. Ooh, it's over.
As soon as I get my vaccine passport through on my app, the global pandemic has ended as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
I'll be snatching masks off people and, you know, demanding to know why they're wearing them everywhere I go.
I mean, the day, for me, Freedom Day will be when No Time to Die is finally in cinemas. Cinematically, that has been the bellwether film release to see where we are in COVID.
What, you mean the broccoli family or whatever is not going to release it until they know exactly when it's safe, and that's when they're going to release No Time to Die.
Well, yeah, either that or it will be an indication of like how much you can spend on advertising and still turn a profit. Like, it'll be an interesting data will come out of that film, if nothing else.
I'd totally forgotten about that movie existed.
You didn't see the final trailer that dropped today? The poor editors have to somehow squeeze like another like 6 seconds worth of like new footage out of the stuff they're allowed to show. So like, it's quite funny from that regard. Like, you know, building up. It's been 2 years now. I was like, are you excited? There's the shot of him on the motorbike. He's still going to do that. That's still in the film. It's like, Craig, he's somehow, even though this footage is 2 years old, he seems older in this trailer somehow. I don't know why. Maybe it's just me putting it onto that after the fact. What are you going to do?
Got a segue for you here, Danny. Mm-hmm. James Bond and his tendency to shag is a nice little segue into something else I wanted to talk about. So yesterday, as we record, I watched a whole bunch of Matrix films. I missed the like first two-thirds of the first film, but like caught the sort of climax of that, and then watched The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions at my girlfriend's flat. And interesting films to revisit for a number of reasons. Firstly, because like the sequels are kind of quite maligned, you know, they weren't like terribly well received at the time, so it was interesting to kind of go back and check them out. And also, it's just interesting to see how blockbuster filmmaking has changed in the years since those movies, because like obviously The Matrix is like an incredibly seminal film, and The Matrix Reloaded had a lot of burdens of expectations, which you can kind of see playing out of some of the choices they made in it. But definitely interesting to watch them back to back, noticing, for example, that the first two movies end with Rage Against the Machine, but then the third one ends with like a kind of epic orchestral choral track, and it's like the franchise's transformation from like cool kung fu film to fantasy epic has been fully complete.
Yeah.
which is interesting. But I think maybe just coming to them being so aware of their flaws, it was just easier to enjoy them. And I thought that the second and third movie were kind of great, honestly, revisiting them. They just have some absolutely spectacular action sequences, especially The Matrix Reloaded, which has some stuff which is just insanely cool. And I think, like, you cannot deny the coolness factor as being a huge part of what makes The Matrix 1 great.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's just an insanely cool film. I don't think it's ever going to be possible to do sunglasses and trench coats again and get within an inch of the amount of coolness that The Matrix squeezes out of that look. But yeah, the James Bond connection, they are striking also for having sex in them in a way that modern blockbusters don't tend to. I think they're obviously like a higher age rating than, Marvel films or superhero blockbusters or whatever. But nevertheless, it's still notable. Like, I mean, it will be interesting to see, like, will The Matrix Resurrections, the fourth Matrix film coming out later this year, is that going to be a 15? Like, will there be boobs in that? Or are they going to sort of 12A it and it will be, you know, bastardized in that respect? But yeah, The Matrix Reloaded is in particular quite a horny film with a sort of big sweaty rave where, like, they're all kind of grinding on each other, and that's, like, intercut with Trinity and Neo having sex. And it is something which is definitely gone from movies these days. And I'm sure we've, like, referenced this before, something we've talked about, the, like, absence of sex from blockbusters, how, like, they're full of incredibly beautiful actors who don't do anything except, like, chastely peck each other on the lips, basically. It's like the return of the old Hollywood kiss, where, like, a passionate embrace was just two totally dry pairs of lips being kind of smushed together like dolls, where, like, their faces don't move until they separate. Movies these days are a lot like that. But it was also, like, watching The Matrix Reloaded, like, the sort of rave in The Matrix Reloaded is all about this sort of human experience, this kind of, like, mass human connection, right? Like, it's this transcendent, sure, yeah. It's a transcendent rave, you know?
The robots
The robots don't do that, yeah.
That's how you delineate, like, them.
They don't rave. Like, Agent Smith is always going on about humans being, like, these disgusting, like, sweaty, stinky creatures, and they're like viruses and they're so gross, you know, compared to their, like, antiseptic, you know, perfection of machines. And then the big rave, which is so apposite, it clearly should have been in the first film also, although there is a sort of rave, isn't there?
Yeah.
There a rave? Trinity is at a rave at the very beginning. But anyway, you know, that's all the celebration of the stinky sweatiness of people, which is, like, what brings people together and makes people alive through that. And it's quite a good treatment of sex in the film, really, because it's thematically appropriate to what the film is getting at. You know, it's, like, something that's extremely human, and it's about, like, building connection between people. And I think that the romance between Neo and Trinity is not actually particularly good in the Matrix films, because it's all a bit too, there's too much tell and not enough show or whatever. I think, like, they spend a lot of time saying how in love with each other they are, but it's, you know, very reliant on kind of explicit declarations of love and so on. And then, like, dramatic scenes where, like, one of them saves the other's life, but I don't know. I feel like it's a bit less. They don't have a very, like, easy chemistry or whatever, because they spend so much time doing business. But in that scene, it really works, you know, to sort of illustrate the point. And, like, sex is not just in the film to, like, you know, because they're having to tick some box where people have to be titillated by, you know, like, erotica as well as by violence. That it's really, like, used to further what the movie is trying to say. And that's something which is definitely absent from major filmmaking today.
Yeah, definitely. It was interesting rewatching it, you know, it was always there, but, like, you watch it, like, the queer coding of these movies is off the charts. And it's so funny that, like, the right wing of, like, adopted the phrase red pill, and it's like, these are the gayest films that were ever made in mainstream Hollywood. And it's all about how, you know, how you think of yourself, your identity is separate from your physical form. All this stuff is just like, you know, they couldn't have made it more blatant in a way. It's so obvious in retrospect.
It's also jam-packed with, like, kink aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? It's like BDSM and leather and,
like, the Merovingian's Club is just like a kind of, like, gay sex club, basically. Like, it's full of gimps. Like, they fight a bunch of guys wearing, like, leather masks and stuff.
Yeah, and Agent Smith is, like, a repressed gay guy, and it's like, he's trying to wear a suit. It's like, dude, just fucking, just come to the club, you know? Like, just wear something a bit looser.
There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure.
Superhero films announced, casting rumors leaking out. M. Night Shyamalan's film is hated, Paul Thomas Anderson's is fated, Meryl Streep's Oscar tipped, Matt Damon's in a viral vid, Michael Bay's made a mint. That's the news that's fit to print.
Alrighty, so we've probably got 6 months or so of film news to catch up on, Danny. So what's been happening?
Well, I mean, the biggest news is that, you know, for weeks we're like, when's the Spider-Man trailer going to come out? When's the Spider-Man trailer going to come out? And they're like, oh, it's coming out next Tuesday. And then Tuesday rolled along, it's like, no, it's not Tuesday, it's a different time. And it's come out, and oh my god, they're all back, aren't they? So if you've not seen it, Doctor Strange does a spell and it makes the multiverse happen, and Alfred Molina's back. It's not clear how that came about, but it seems like they're somehow combining the previous two Sony Spider-Man universes with this Spider-Man universe. In a somewhat sort of cynical, like, remember Enter the Spider-Verse? Everyone loved that movie. Like, we'll just do it again, but, you know, shell out for Alfred Molina's, you know, how much his mortgage is these days.
Hello, Peter.
I found the thing, like, on one hand, I'm like, I love Alfred Molina's performance as Doc Ock. I think it's, like, amazing. And, I you know, his just, like, him just saying hi, Peter, was like, oh, this guy's back. And, you know, it got me a bit of, you know, got me a bit nostalgic. But then the bottom of me is, like, this is so cynical, like, the way it's sort of put together, that I'm not sure if the Molina-ness can outweigh the cynicism of it.
I feel similarly. I think that it's a constant niggle at the back of your mind with the whole Marvel thing, is the extent to which this is a massive branding exercise first, and then a film second. And the way that the Spider-Man thing has been stitched together with this uncomfortable deal with Sony, where Marvel doesn't like own Spider-Man, but they could sort of got him on loan, I think exacerbates those problems. And it's obviously in Sony's financial interests to tie their less successful films to the more successful, like, Marvel films. And so for them to retroactively make the Amazing Spider-Man part of the Marvel canon can only be to, like, Sony's benefit. And they're probably going to try to get Venom in there as well somehow. So it does feel a bit like, you know, poor Spidey and his, like, friends are just, like, trapped in another web, a web that has been created by two gigantic corporations trying to squeeze as much money out of him as possible. On the other hand, there is, like, some kind of precedent for doing this kinds of nonsense, not just the Into the Spider-Verse movie, but, you know, the comics via, well, my knowledge of like comics doing this kind of thing is via the Fox animated show in the 90s, which concluded with a very bizarre and surreal plot involving someone called, like, Madam Web or something, who's some interdimensional being, having Spider-Man meet a bunch of other versions of himself from different universes, and they all, like, get sent to an island and have to fight bad guys together or something like that. And then the very, very end of the series features Spider-Man going to our universe, like the real universe, meeting his own creator, Stan Lee, and then swinging about New York with him. Yeah, so they have pulled this kind of thing before, like, so it's not like something that's totally unheard of with, like, for Spider-Man to be doing this, but it does feel a bit like they saw that this was a thing, and also that, as you say, Into the Spider-Verse was a hit, and they were like, you know, yeah, let's get them back, let's get them all in there, you know, and it's going to feel a bit more like your attending a panel at Comic-Con than watching a film, you know, expecting to applaud every time you see a familiar face turn up on screen. Like, it's them.
Yeah.
You know, everyone loved Endgame. Like, in Endgame or Infinity War, it's just someone turns up for another film and you're like, oh, it's the person from the other film.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Fuck. Yeah, they're here. Shit, I fucking love this. And then they're just going to be doing that now. It's like, oh, so this is the Green Goblin. Fuck yes. I don't have to go and look at old clips of Willem Dafoe because he's just here in my new film. So we'll all be doing that.
Yeah, definitely. I do feel a bit sorry for... I always forget. Is it Tom Hollander or Tom Holland?
Tom Holland. I wish it was Tom Hollander.
If only he was playing Peter Parker. That'd be great.
He's small. He'd be perfect. He'd probably pass for 16.
Yeah, I feel like... Because of the way, you know, he came into the franchise via not his own movie, via Civil War or whatever. So, like, you know, Uncle Ben died off camera. And it feels like he's constantly just sort of, like, plugging the gaps of, like, the Marvel franchise, as you were saying. And it's a shame because he's so winning in the role. It's almost like, definitely. I just wish they just, like, get Sam Raimi back and just don't worry too much about other stuff. And just give him, you know, one villain... And just little Spidey and do his charming Queen's accent, and that would be great. But obviously, that can't happen because too much money rests on his little shoulders.
There's also like, I think it just really lends itself to the feeling you're just watching like an episode of some TV series, which if we talk about Black Widow later, is like a similar issue for that. But when I watch the trailer for it, and he goes off to visit Doctor Strange, and it's like, I just saw this film. You know, he was doing that in Endgame and Infinity War. You know, he was hanging out with Doctor Strange, like they were seeing what they could do about the latest problem or whatever. It's just like, it's just the latest episode of the show. You know, it's not a film. It doesn't feel like its own event.
What I'm really hoping is for a scene with all the Aunt Mays, you know, all like delivering different like monologues about what it means to be a superhero. And like Marisa Tomei is like, do I become this? Jesus, I'm so much
is
hotter.
The actress who played the Maguire Aunt May, she's still alive. She's pretty elderly in that film.
Yeah, I hope so, because she was great. I believe there's a hero in all of us. And then, like, the monologues got, like, insane towards, like, the third one. Like, her story about, like, being proposed to by Uncle Ben goes on for about 6 years, I remember. Just relentless.
That really cracked me up at the time.
Rosemary Harris. She's still with us. She's 93 years old. Oh, my God.
There's still time. Get her on set.
Holy shit, did you know... Okay, so her daughter is Elizabeth Bennet in the Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice.
Really?
Jennifer Eale?
Jennifer Eale?
Yeah. Her mum is Aunt May. Wow. Oh my... You're hearing me react real time to this news. Oh my God.
Wow.
I can sort of see it now. Anyway, so I'm hoping for Aunt May and also maybe all the Uncle Ben's, just their corpses. I don't know. I don't know how that would work exactly. Surely there's a universe where Uncle Ben's alive. Maybe he comes back. Cliff Robertson and Martin Sheen, they're just there.
Yeah, maybe. That would be less morbid than having him, like, you know, having, like, a field of corpses transported into his universe. He gets drowned in Uncle Ben's from a million different realities.
In every dimension, Uncle Ben dies. There's no escaping Uncle Ben's death.
Let me ask you this.
Please.
Does it make sense for there to be all sorts of different Spider-Men who are basically the same, except they just look... Like, if Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield exist in the multiverse, right? Like, wouldn't it make more sense for, like, someone who looks the same to lead a slightly different life rather than a bunch of guys who look totally different leading the same life?
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It should be Tom Holland... But, like, you know, he was ill that day, so the spider didn't bite him, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, an alternate reality where, like, you know, Flash Thompson, Spider-Man, and Peter Parker's the bully.
Mm.
Not just, like, Spider-Man, it's exactly the same, but he just is a different guy. He looks totally different, but he's still the same guy. Like, you know, that doesn't make sense.
Oh, they're genetically the same, but, like, you know, it's just the way, yeah, exactly. The chromosomes land.
Do they have exactly the same, like, ancestry and everything? Or, like, is it some weird, is it converging in the different realities? Like, what's the deal?
I hope there's a lot of this in the film. That'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too. Looking forward to that.
Oh, I hope you've considered a proper proposal. Your uncle had it all planned. He took me to the beach one Sunday. Oh, he was a knockout in his bathing suit. And I didn't look too bad myself. We were very good swimmers. And it was a beautiful day, and he said, let's swim to the island. And at the island, we found a perfect spot by an old tree. And we lay down and looked up at the sky. And then he said, close your eyes, May. And I did. And then he said, open. And I did. And he was holding this ring.
And now for Danny to review a film he recently saw. Was it staggeringly brilliant? Was it ass-clenchingly poor? How did Danny form a judgment? We're about to hear his thoughts. If he does a rubbish job, then Sam will tell him off.
So, another round. This is written by Tobias Lindholm.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And Thomas Vinterberg, and directed by Thomas Vinterberg, and was the winner of Best Foreign Language Film at this year's Oscars. And it's been out for a while, so it should be easy to find. I think it's on demand now. But the basic premise is that Mads Mikkelsen plays a history teacher called Martin, who's, at the beginning of the film, is in the throes of like a midlife crisis. And his friend, a fellow teacher, mentions this academic paper, which is a real academic paper by a psychologist called Finn Skardarund, which posits the idea that human beings are born with a blood alcohol deficiency. So basically, we're born too sober. And his theory is that we all need to basically have a couple of drinks in us, like 0.5 blood alcohol level, and our lives would drastically improve. And Martin, sort of, you know, having nothing to lose, puts his theory to the test and is soon joined by his teaching pals as they sort of, what begins as a sort of experiment, quickly sort of gets a bit out of hand about whether they can sort of microdose during the day and by doing so kind of discover some joie de vivre for life. I would play a clip, but it's all in Danish. And I don't know how many of our listeners speak Danish. I mean, I don't. So, just not going to do it. So, I'm not sure if I have much to add, because it's been critically ordered everywhere. I think it basically kind of lived up to the hype for me. It's a really brilliant watch. And I think what's so, what I liked about it so much is the subject matter means it has a kind of universal appeal. And it's almost surprising that a film which has this sort of take on alcohol hasn't been made before, because any film about drinking is all about alcoholism and the dangers of drinking. And this film doesn't shy away from that, and I think it's quite responsible in the way it handles it. But I was listening to an interview with Thomas Vinterberg where he just made the very obvious point that alcohol has been around for about 500 years in sort of our culture. It's such an integral part of our culture and is there for a lot of the great times in your life. Like a lot of people, you know, their first dates usually involve alcohol. When you meet your future wife or your future husband, 9 times out of 10, alcohol is present. And this movie has this sort of refreshingly honest take on how kind of booze can kind of get you where you're going. It's got a very sort of non-judgmental view of alcohol, where it's basically like a tool. You can overindulge, but at the same time, there are positives to being a little bit pissed, which is my experience and is rarely put on screen. And also, I think that sort of take makes the whole thing appealing, because ultimately it's a film about like sad white men having midlife crises, which is like a subject matter I'm very bored of. Like at the moment, like The White Lotus and 9 Perfect Strangers on TV, and it's just like, you know, we've got Succession. We don't need shows about sad white people. But this one, by virtue of having this sort of alcohol perspective, makes it really interesting. Another thing I really liked was just its depiction of male camaraderie. And I watched this movie like quite soon after watching Promising Young Women, which he obviously depicts men as sort of drunken predators, which is obviously true of a certain percentage of men, but this one I think is more true to the larger percentage of men, which is like men are just basically become kind of boys when they're drunk, and they basically just want to make a human pyramid and maybe get a kebab and hug each other and tell how much they love each other. And I think it makes some interesting points about, like, men are socialized that the only emotion it's okay to express is anger. And the reason, like, he's depressed at the start of the film, and I think a reason why men are depressed is because men are just lonely. Because they don't feel they can talk about things, but, like, alcohol, like, enables you to express yourself in a way which is, like, socially acceptable, which is something that's rarely put on screen. So I sort of thought that was, like, really kind of interesting take on things. And it basically, it really milks the premise for what it's worth. There's just, like, a lot of drama and comedy out of the idea, like, in certain scenes, you, as the audience, know that, like, this character's drunk and he's got to go for a meeting with somebody. And you're like, it could go anywhere. It's exciting. You know, it's just a genius conceit. Make some of your characters a bit pissed and see what they're going to do. The parameters of what may or may not happen in scenes just get stretched a little bit in a way that's exhilarating. And sort of carrying this all was like a tour de force performance by Mads Mikkelsen. He's just, he's just a really compelling leading man. It's quite funny in that, like, all the other actors are great, but they're like these Danish character actors, and he is, I would say, just a lot more handsome than everyone else in the movie. It's very, you know, there's a reason why this guy escaped the Denmark film industry and is working in Hollywood. And it's just like, this is one sexy history teacher. But his just, I don't know, but like his sort of, the way he is such a sort of shell of himself at the start of the movie, and also just playing drunk, I think is a hard thing to do well. You know, it's so easily overdone. And the way they sort of, you know, and playing like a little bit drunk is like a hard thing to do convincingly. And they did that, the sort of the technical achievement of their performances is really remarkable. So yeah, I don't want to say too much about it because like a lot of the joy of the movie is where it goes, because it kind of sets up this premise. Everyone's going to get a bit drunk and this might go totally wrong. And the way that evolves over its like runtime is really exhilarating. And just had like a, I think another reason why it's come out to so many good reviews is partly is it is a bit of a sort of like anti-lockdown, not in a protesty way, but like it's just about people hanging out and getting drunk and hugging. And it's just like quite nice to see that. You know, it's the thing people have missed the most. So it's quite like a feel-good movie, really, at the end of the day. I had a total blast. Go watch it.
Looks like Sam's got a film to review. He's just getting ready now. Hey, Sam, here's a few tips for you that I hope are gonna help you out. You gotta come prepared, try not to rush. Speak directly into the mic. Don't sort of use filler words too much and try to avoid talking total shite. Okay, start reviewing now.
Danny, can I tell you all about Black Widow?
Please. I just got back from signing my petition. Disney gives ScarJo her money. So I'm excited to see, like, you know, what happened there in terms of the film.
Release the ScarJo cut.
Yeah, exactly.
The cut meaning her cut of the revenue. Black Widow. This is the latest Marvel film. Marvel's much delayed slate is finally starting to come out. This was supposed to come out sometime basically before all of their TV shows, I think, but those ended up coming out first, and so it was like hanging around for a while, and then it's finally gotten a release. I paid to watch this on Disney Plus. I will leave it up to our listeners to decide whether that makes me a chump or not. It is directed by Kate Shortland and takes place after the events of Civil War. As in the main Marvel continuity, Black Widow is dead as of Avengers Endgame, spoilers. And this one is, you know, just a kind of slice of Black Widow's life, you know, I guess, and takes place between the events of Captain America Civil War and Infinity War, and depicts Scarlett Johansson as the, Russian assassin returning to Russia and sort of reacquainting herself with her old family there and an old villain, and kind of laying to rest some old demons. Here is a clip.
Why do you always do that thing?
Do what?
The thing you do when you're fighting. And the, like the, this thing that you do when you whip your hair when you're fighting with the arm and the hair, and you do like a fighting pose. It's a, yeah. It's a fighting pose. You're a total poser.
I'm not a poser.
So, I will not dwell too much on this film. But it is definitely one of the weaker elements in the one of the weaker Marvel films, I would say, in which the general complaints about Marvel movies are at their most sort of pressing. You know, all the weaknesses of Marvel films are present in this one and kind of ramped up, and some of the elements that differentiate them, or like the more positive elements, you know, for some of the movies are definitely less present here. And I think it's certainly a shame. But basically, the issue people have with Marvel is that they feel like they're factory produced, right? They're like, they're produced to a formula and they're somewhat samey and you kind of know what you're getting into. And also that they look televisual and there's an over-reliance on CGI. And all those elements are extremely present in Black Widow, I would say. And it was always going to be a film that was hard for it to escape that, I think, because it is a film about a character who is dead, so it immediately loses a sense of consequentiality for the larger story of where the universe is going. You know, it does not advance the story meaningfully, and it's always going to be this weird kind of prequel. Like, it doesn't, that just means it doesn't have an obvious reason to exist. You know, it has a harder job to define why we're watching this film, and it does not really succeed. I think that when I heard that it was going to, like, when I heard the movie was going to be made, what I was hoping for was that Marvel would continue its approach of generating a sense of originality or freshness for each installment by adopting elements from other genres and or hiring directors who are known for particular things, and then creating a little, you know, paddock area or sandpit where they can go and do their thing and kind of, you know, the first AD or their visual effects team will handle the Marvel stuff, and then, you know, the other director can come in and add their own like flourishes so that the film kind of, you know, feels perhaps more original than it is.
Yeah.
And Black Widow doesn't really do either of those things. It's not a very distinctive film from a creative standpoint. Doesn't have a strong sense of auteurishness or whatever. And it isn't what I thought it might be, which would be like a spy film. I thought it would perhaps just borrow from the tropes of spy movies, maybe some kind of Cold War spy thriller, since this Russian-American thing is so present in the concept of the character. And it might do a lot to kind of feel like that, in the same way that, you know, you would not mistake Captain America the Winter Soldier for some sort of Cold War spy movie. But it obviously borrowed a bit from certain films and a certain aesthetic in order to give the movie some of its character. And instead, it's very comic booky in that it feels like an issue where there's a bunch of familiar characters and a bunch of new comic book characters, and they've all been sort of thrown together. So there are familiar faces and like new characters, but they're very much like just, they're from superhero world. I don't know exactly how else to put it, but they're cartoony, and I feel that it just increases the general sense of this being rather like inconsequential and throwaway. In terms of like positive aspects, Florence Pugh plays a kind of sister figure for Scarlett Johansson, and she is very good in it. She has probably the best written parts and gets some good banter with Scarlett Johansson. And similarly, David Harbour as her kind of father figure, he's a sort of deadbeat dad. He's like Homer Simpson crossed with like the Russian guy from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And he's kind of a comic relief character, but he does quite a good job, I think, cheering up his Russianness. And so there is certainly some enjoyment to be had out of the like family chemistry that's going on there. And like those are probably the most successful sequences in the film, where the family is kind of hanging out together. But it really does fall flat in like the action scenes. Like, they're just very forgettable. And if it's going to be cartoony, I feel like it has to kind of really go big and be like a Fast and Furious movie. But like, when that franchise exists and it's so extra, then this kind of thing just seems rather small bore and flat. And it felt ultimately like a DVD extra on Captain America Civil War. It's like, you know, want to know what Scarlett Johansson was up to for a couple of weeks? Like, check this out. So I don't know, for fans only, I would say. And I mean, this is the last thing I'll say, I've probably already taken more airtime than the movie really warrants, but the later Marvel projects, the spin-off TV series, and now this movie, which really feels like a spin-off as well, I think they are too much kind of relying on like the goodwill of like the fan base who wants to see these characters just go out and do stuff. And they're not enough taking the opportunity to freshly define them and even, you know, take the risk to break with your impressions of the characters. And instead, they're relying on things which are not really well established enough in the films. Like, WandaVision is kind of all about this romance between Wanda Maximoff and the Vision, which is just not well established in the movies. Falcon the Winter Soldier is like all about this like buddy dynamic between two minor characters who honestly don't get that much development in the films, despite being in like millions of them. They're always quite minor characters who just aren't that important. So it feels like their prior appearances are just holding them back from their own stories getting a real sense of like individuality or being able to breathe, basically. So I think this movie would have been better if this was the first film Black Widow had been in, you know, and they could just decide from scratch like what to do with it and how they were going to make this character. But she's been in, you know, about 40 or 50 Marvel films, so yeah, they're I feel like they're a little bit they struggled with that a bit.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Poor ScarJo. I mean, you know, she's crying all the way to the bank, although I guess like not to a big enough check that she really wants because of the, I don't know, whatever dispute she has. I'm sure she's absolutely fine. I'll take it all back if it turns out she's like really struggling financially, but she probably isn't.
My favorite film stars Bridget Bardot. She's the queen, but she wants to be in radio, so she starts a podcast with her friends, and the terrorists try to stop her, but she beats them in the end.
Is there anything on your radar, Danny, that you're really looking forward to coming out soon?
I am up in arms that I can't see The Green Knight yet. I mean, it's supposed to be a Dev Patel summer, but they pushed the UK release. Now it's not even been announced. So I'm very excited for that because it looked very cool. And I quite like sort of British folk lore stuff, you know? I don't know if this is a bit soapboxy, because so much of like British culture is just about like World War II and Empire. I just like stuff which is like older than that. You know, this country's been around for fucking millennia. Is that even right? I don't know. It's been around for a long time, you know? And it didn't begin with Elgar.
No, 100%. 100%.
And, yeah, and I like Dev Patel a lot. I like how, you know, his slow arc to becoming the hottest member of Skins. You know, he started off pretty low in the rankings, but he's just, I mean, where's Maxie? Where's Chris? Where's Tony? Where's Sid? I mean, Sid was already pretty low. Sid was probably the most butters. He was probably second to Sid. But he's leapfrogged them all. He's come out of nowhere. And it's like, sorry, Nicholas Holt, you thought you were hot. Nah, mate, I'm the hot one.
Yeah. Sid's character was that he wanked a pawn tragically, whereas the other characters got to fuck, you know, which was much more because they were better looking.
That always pissed me off. Like, I sort of generally like Skins and like what it was attempting, and its sort of ambition is quite, I kind of miss that in TV. And it's probably like very dated now in a way, which is, you know, suggests they were getting something right. But I always hated how, like, the lame character, the one I was supposed to identify with, like, the sort of virgin guy, is like, okay, I'm not cool, but I'm not fucking Sid, you know? Don't do this to me, Skins, you know? Can you... like, I'm not that guy, okay? I'm not Tony, but I'm not fucking Sid, you know? Jesus.
Well, we're all a Tony or a Sid, so I'm afraid you must be a Sid if you weren't a Tony.
No, I'm Anwar, you know? I don't... that character spoke to me, yeah. He also was a bit... He was also wanking a lot, right? But...
I don't know. I'm pretty sure, like, masturbating... If you're being filmed by the TV show doing it, it's a clear sign that you're a weirdo. Mm. Or at least a loser.
Yeah.
The cooler, hotter boys did all their jerking off screen.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a totally normal tangent. So to conclude... Very excited.
To conclude, you're looking forward to The Green Knight when that comes out.
Looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to June. I'm looking forward to the disaster it's going to be. I feel like it's not going to make
enough
money.
You think it's going to be a disaster?
Well, I don't know. I just don't think it's going to make enough money to, like, apparently it's like...
Yeah, just give me a flop, yeah.
It might be, like, you know, good, but, you know, I got the sense, all the rumblings is that, like, it's very much like part one, and it's like... there's a real swing and a miss, but maybe that's kind of exciting, you know? It could, maybe, he's hoping.
Doesn't Villeneuve have a bad record anyway with these, aren't his blockbusters, like, they don't make money, like, Blade Runner 2049 was not a success, right?
Yeah, so,
I don't know. Financially, I mean, it was critically a success, but it didn't make money, so they were just like, here's a bigger budget.
Yeah, so, who knows? But it'll be, you know, exciting to see a big non-Disney movie, you know?
I want it to do for sand what Aquaman did for fish.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think I need to explain that anymore.
Well, Jason Momoa is in it, so bring that hot, dumb guy energy to June.
Can't wait.
Okay.
Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you always, as always, Danny. And yeah, we'll be back. Well, who knows when? Probably soon, though.
Who knows? To review No Time to Die in 2026 or whenever it comes out.
Exactly. All right. Sayonara.
Bye bye.
The first TV show I ever auditioned for, my mum saw an advert in the back of this newspaper called The Metro, which is a free newspaper on all the trains in London. She tore it out and dragged me to this open casting. I was 16 years old and I was very reluctant. I was in my school uniform with my mum. We waited outside the National Youth Theatre in London and it was for this TV show called Skins. I did get it, yes, so it was a success. I played this character called Anwar. I was wildly hyperactive. He's kind of like that little chihuahua that keeps humping your leg. Very sexually charged and, you know, was trying to do anything to lose his virginity.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.